This speech did stray outside the usual Fed wheelhouse. And the reaction from some members was obviously somewhat reproachful. Some of them clearly felt you didn't know what you were talking about, or perhaps didn't have a right to be speaking about some of these subjects even. What do you feel about that reaction that you received? And the woman who really went at you about the miracles comment, she got a lot of support in the crowd.
Yeah, I think it demonstrates why for 30 years we've made very little progress in closing racial disparities. Unless we as a country really believe and embrace that this is a crisis that warrants a crisis response, we're going to have lots of continued good intentions and little changes in outcomes. And so this was an attempt by me to say this really is a crisis. Let's start treating it like one.
I'm not sure how the sort of reproachful reaction is evidence of us.
No, but when people were saying, remember the first comment was, well, look at the overall average scores. They're going up. Isn't that enough? That doesn't begin to capture the fact that those average scores, that the disparities are buried within those average scores.
And so in other words, they're frustrated over it. But I'm talking about their frustration with your comments, not with the data itself.
I think people don't like to be... No one wants to be told that what they're doing is failing. And I think it's time we as a country admitted what we're doing is not working in terms of closing the racial gaps.
Can I jump in?
Sure.
Just to ask you about slack in the labor market. You talked a little bit about this in your explanation of why you voted against a rate increase. Are you actually seeing evidence of that workers are being drawn off the sidelines? Is that clear that these sort of workers who've been out of the labor force are coming back in?
The data is mixed. You hear anecdotes about people coming back in. You also hear some of the data suggests people are not leaving who otherwise we would have expected to leave the labor force. My reaction is if it's people being drawn back in or people choosing not to leave, I'll take it. Either way, it's a healthier labor market. More people are working. More people are earning. I'll take both.
So kind of expand a little bit on that. And by the way, I actually tweeted a question at you and you didn't respond. So
I didn't?
You did respond.
Oh, I did.
So
okay.
It was impressive how quickly you work on the keyboard. But I want to ask a little bit about, expanding on the labor market. It seemed like from your blog post after the FOMC that your concerns were mostly on the inflation side. But the speech today also, you're kind of talking about education in terms of trying to prepare the future generations for a more proper matching of the labor market. Is that something that you see as a longer term issue, and that in the shorter term you're more concerned about inflation? Am I reading that right, or is it kind of a...
Well, the education piece is definitely a long term issue. Right now, when you think about the dual mandate and you think about what I wrote, we know that we're coming up short on our inflation mandate. Right. If you look at the core inflation, and the labor market suggests that there may still be some slack if you look at working age labor force participation. So on one case, I know that we're coming up short. In the other case, I suspect that there's still some slack. Both of those are pushing in the same direction. Right. Some people are don't like the dual mandate because it can create a conflict. Right. If we had high unemployment and high inflation, now how do you choose? Do you balance one over the other? Well, that's not the scenario we're in now. We're in a scenario where on both sides of the dual mandate, we're either at the mandate or there's slack, meaning inflation is coming up low, core inflation, and there may still be some slack in the labor market. And so that's why I did not support a rate increase, because on both sides of the dual mandate, there's no reason to raise rates.
As follow-up, the chair has acknowledged before the labor market slack, but it seems like the inflation maybe not so much. Are the other FOMC participants and also the chair maybe not on the same page as you?
Well, I think that a question mark that we all have is we know the monetary policy works with a lag. And so how far in advance do you want to adjust rates before inflation closes that gap? And what I'm saying is if I look back over the last 5 or 6 years, the FOMC keeps predicting that inflation is around the corner. We made the exact same mistake consistently for 5 or 6 years in a row. Maybe we're repeating that same mistake again.
Can I ask you on the balance sheet policy? A couple of your Fed colleagues, they appear to be saying that they're in favor of publishing a plan by the end of the year. I know you want a plan published before even there's another rate rise, but in terms of the timeline for publishing that plan, how soon do you want that?
I mean, as soon as we're ready to. I mean, my reaction is there's no reason to hold it. I personally would rather, as soon as we've, you know, there are a lot of policy trade-offs we have to choose from. Once we come to a consensus on those trade-offs, I would like us to publish that as soon as possible. I think that we'll do ourselves a favor by giving the markets as much time as possible to understand it, prepare for it, so that there are as few surprises as possible.
And if that plan is not published before your colleagues want to raise rates again, do you intend to dissent again?
it all depends on what the data is saying, on whether I would support further removing monetary accommodation.
Could you explain a little bit more why you think to shrink the balance sheet is more important than going a step forward to raise rates?
Well, because when we make the announcement of whatever our plan is, I expect that that could lead to a tightening of market conditions. So markets may react to that. You could see interest rates adjust, long-term rates adjust, just based on the announcement of that plan. We don't know exactly how much of a tightening that announcement would lead to. Maybe it's very little. Maybe it's more than we expect. I'd want to know that before we move ahead with other interest rate increases, because if we announce that plan and it leads to a tightening of conditions, then we may not want to subsequently raise rates for some more time until the data adjust. So for me, I'd rather know that up front.
Can I ask you to Dodd-Frank? The government wants to dismantle Dodd-Frank. Is there, in your view, the risk that it goes in the wrong direction in terms of capital requirement for banks?
Well, for the biggest banks, and I don't know if you've seen it, we published a draft plan in November. For the biggest banks, I think we substantially need to increase the capital requirements. I would argue roughly double the capital requirements for the biggest banks. I think the people who want to repeal Dodd-Frank, I hope they're more focused on small and mid-sized banks. And so to me, if we could increase capital requirements for the biggest banks, you could couple that with some regulatory relief for other banks, I think that could be a reasonable compromise.
You would be fine with the idea of bringing capital requirements down for little banks?
Little banks are not systemically risky for the country.
Yeah.
And so my biggest concern is not creating risk that could damage the U.S. economy long term.
Yeah.
Obviously, we want every bank to be safe and sound. We don't want little banks to take unnecessary risks or to be undercapitalized. But so my biggest focus is what do we do with the biggest banks, because those are the ones that are risky for the economy.
Okay, one more.
Sure.
So in your essay, you said the gradual path is not always the right path. So, but are you not worried if you go rapidly, then it may cause harm to the economy?
You know, we've looked at this, and it isn't obvious that one is necessarily better than the other. So imagine a scenario where we're starting at a starting point, and we end up at the same destination in terms of interest rate, let's say 2 years in the future. I mean, this is a hypothetical example. Imagine we stayed flat, and then inflation started to build, and then we rapidly went up to that target near the end of that period. It isn't obvious from the economic theory that that is a better path for the economy than gradual rate increases to the same destination. Because in gradual rate increases, you're reducing monetary accommodation earlier, so the economy over a longer period of time has less accommodation. I'm not saying one is better than the other, but from the research that I've looked at, it's not obvious when people say, oh, we should go gradual. It isn't obvious to me that that's necessarily the right answer. And so that means for me, I'm not saying they're wrong, but I'm saying it's not persuasive that that's a reason for me to go ahead and support a rate increase just because we want gradualism for its own sake.
You don't think you're not afraid of behind the curve?
Well, you know, it's a balance of risk. So in the paper, the essay I wrote about risk management, we have very, very powerful tools if inflation surprises up to the upside. We can always raise rates to make sure inflation stays in check. And I know the committee is committed to preserving our inflation target. It's much harder for us to deal with low inflation. And we have fewer tools to deal with low inflation. So from a risk management perspective, that tells me we should err on the side of being more accommodative rather than raising rates prematurely.
One argument that you did not address in that piece was the argument that assuming rate rises are appropriately timed, moving the Fed funds rate rather than turning to the balance sheet helps create space between zero and the Fed funds rate so that if we do hit a shock, you could...
Yeah, I don't find that compelling. To me, that's like saying you're driving down the highway and you think you might be coming up to a hill. You don't know yet. So I'm going to let off the gas so that if the hill comes, I've got room to floor it. All right? You're much better to just maintain your speed. And then if the hill comes, then give it whatever rainy gas you've got.
Assuming the rate rises are appropriately timed, I'm saying, with respect to rate rises versus balance sheet movement, assuming in either case the correct amount of accommodation is removed, so you're not actually taking your... If there's a difference between how much change within the between those two, I should say.
But then it goes to, you're right, but then it goes to how likely are we going to be, if there's a minor economic shock, are we going to then just jump and start cutting rates again back down to zero? I don't know. And so to me, if we get the balance sheet plan out there, I'd like to put it on essentially autopilot, where it just starts rolling off gradually in the background, and that way market's attention and our attention can all be focused back on the Fed funds rate as the primary policy tool. I think there are advantages to putting that behind us.
You did say it would require kind of a pause in Fed funds rate movements.
Well, until we saw the market reaction. But I'm saying once we've got that and understood, now the balance sheet plan is effectively on autopilot, which is what I would love to see.
Okay.
Then we can get back. Everybody can stop paying attention to the balance sheet.
Well, how long would that...
I mean, it could be short. It could be a month. You know,
okay.
It could be short.
So not that long.
Yeah, not that long.
Okay.
Could you explain or elaborate a little bit on the process for discussing that balance sheet strategy with the rest of the FOMC? I mean, it's quite unprecedented. You know, something this type of magnitude. I mean, we saw even just for SEPs, for example, it took several FOMC minutes meetings showed by the minutes to just publish dot plots.
Yeah.
So, in terms of balance sheet, rollback and communicating that to markets. How contentious is that of an issue among the committee?
There's no contentiousness. It's something that everybody's very interested in. People have different views. There's a lot of dialogue. And even the public dialogue, right? People are talking about it in their speeches and whatnot. I wrote about it, obviously, in my Medium piece. So it's just an ongoing dialogue, and you know, the chair is going to manage the process and lead us, I think, efficiently to hopefully the right conclusion.
There's a 3-minute warning. We have time for one or two more questions. What are your current expectations for fiscal stimulus, and are you incorporating those into your forecasts?
Yeah, as I've written about, I still have not embedded anything in my forecast. I think the political climate is too hard to predict, and we don't have enough certainty about what Congress and the administration will ultimately do. And so until we do, I'm going to stick with no change.
What do you think about the way markets have reacted? And do you have any concern that, you know, if Congress takes too long to move on some of these things? I mean, you've spent time in Washington. You know how this goes.
Sure.
Are you concerned at all that some of the gains we've seen and this optimism will reverse?
I wouldn't be surprised by that. And that's why, I mean, in January when I wrote my first Medium piece, I said markets are not good at these kind of predictions. Mm-hmm. And so we'll see. But I'm not concerned that it's going to have some dramatic negative economic effect, but I wouldn't be surprised if markets give back some of those optimistic gains.
Have you been asked by anyone in the Trump administration whether you'd be interested in the vice chair for supervision post?
No, I've not had any discussions with the administration about any role.
Isn't it also the risk management perspective that to raise rate as much as possible before economy go bad because of the Trump
administration? But that's, again, that goes back to this analogy we talked about earlier, which is if you, again, maybe only I like this analogy, driving down the highway and you think there's a hill coming up, that's the recession. Do you want to let off the gas now because you might have a hill so you can floor it? Or are you better just maintaining your speed? So if we really thought a recession was on the horizon, we'd be much better off maintaining interest rates where they are and then responding with whatever tools we have if that arises, than preemptively raising rates just to turn around and end up cutting them if the recession comes.
Okay.